Yes, it's that time of the week again, and we've got Cheryl Shaw here, and now Dr. Kimberly Earle, who's just taking her seat, couldn't get a park. We finally made it.
Made it.
Good
made
afternoon.
It. Hello.
Hello.
Oh, I've got to turn you on, Cheryl. There
okay,
we go.
Okay, better turn
that's,
me on.
That's right. Now, today, Cheryl, you've got a pin with a jar and some dogs inside.
Yeah, little antidepressants. Patting a dog makes you feel so good.
It does, doesn't it? That's that well-being.
Yeah.
You know. So what about you, Kimberly? Have you got anything that you want to talk about, or I just
we'll
you
see
like
how
a
many
deer
calls
in the headlights?
Come through? Yeah, a little bit. I was thinking we might talk about eyes, issues with eyes.
Sounds good. Hi, David. How can we help you?
Sure, yeah. I've got an American Staffy, and every morning our dog has sleep in his eyes.
Okay. So
I
is...
Wonder,
yep. Is it rubbing at the eyes? Does it, like, appear to be painful or anything in the eyes?
No, it's just a bit of sleep where I just wipe out with tissue.
Yeah, and is it, like, just a sort of a normal, you know, sort of grey or sort of blacky sort of colour?
Yeah, just a grey sort
yeah.
of colour. Yeah,
so it can depend a lot about their conformation and how their eyelids are put together. Certain dogs will have more loose skin around the eyes, and so they might have sort of deeper pockets that will accumulate a little bit of, you know, sort of it's basically dehydrated tear film that sort of accumulates there. As long as it's not, you know, the eyes itself is not red or inflamed, the dog's not rubbing at it, the material's not got a noticeable smell to it, or it's not sort of a bright green or really yellowy color, it is probably just an accumulation of sleep. And because your dog has been, you know, sort of lying overnight and not moving around and not moving its head around, it's just accumulated there in the corner of the eye. So that can be quite normal, just like it can be for us.
Yeah, well, she sleeps with me every night.
Mm-hmm.
She takes up the whole bed.
Yeah, so you'd probably know then if she was, you know, rubbing at her eyes or shaking her head.
No,
so that's good. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Oh, that's great, David. No, nothing to worry about.
I love the American Staffy. She was a rescue dog, she was.
They're pretty good little dogs.
They are. They are. Thanks
yeah,
for...
Well, she's a big dog.
Yeah.
Oh, a big one to sleep in bed and cuddle with. Thank you so much for your call, David. Appreciate it. Okay, next on the line, we've got Josh from Liddell. Hi, Josh. How can we help you?
G'day, folks. I've got an elderly dog. He's 13. We
yep.
used to do a lot of road running, but we don't move as quick anymore.
Sure.
And his claws are, I can hear him tapping a lot more than
yep.
than these. He hasn't had them clipped for years.
Okay.
But
yep.
I've just started to notice. I'm wondering, is there any tricks, or I'm worried if I go at them because they're so old and hard, they'll shatter.
Mm. Yeah. So I mean, Cheryl's a good one to answer this. My thoughts would be. Always start at the tip and work your way back gradually. And if you can, we want to try to cut in a up and down direction, not a side to side direction, because the side to side really can sort of crush them a little bit more. Any thoughts, Cheryl?
Yeah, another thing, Josh, try to do it when the feet are wet. So after a bath is a really good idea, because then the nail would have taken in some water or moisture and it won't be quite as brittle. So often cutting the nails while after a bath is a good way to do it. It just makes them not quite so brittle. The fact that the dog hasn't had its nails cut for a while, it may be worth going down to your vet or to your local groomer, just so that you get that nail back short. If it's been a period of time, the quick may be elongated down that nail. And with an older dog, they often don't indicate that you're about to cut through the quick.
Yep.
So they don't have those reflexes to sort of indicate to you, don't cut there. So it's probably a job for a professional at this point, considering it hasn't been done for some time.
My sentiments exactly. Great advice.
Well, good luck with that, Josh. And it's nice that you are, you know, considering that they're tapping. That can be causing some discomfort to her toes, to her digits as well. Particularly being an older dog, she's probably got some arthritis in those toes. So worth getting them cut back.
He's an old fella, old Edgar J. Hoover. He's the last out of four that I've had, but he was the worst dog. He's turned into the best.
Yeah.
Oh, that's lovely.
That's nice.
Well,
that's
good luck
lovely.
With him.
Thanks very much, folks.
Thanks for your call. Appreciate it, Josh. Cheryl, you wanted to talk about pet well-being.
Yes, well, it's both
well-being for us.
Well-being for us and well-being for your pet. Now, we know when we pat a dog that it makes us feel really good because we have a release of oxytocin, which makes us happy. It reduces our blood pressure. So it's a great feeling. But for some dogs, how you pat them makes a big difference. So they can be reactive to how you're approaching and how you're patting. So there's two terms that are used for patting a pet, and it's either patting or petting. What do you use, Kimberly?
I don't know. Patting.
Probably a bit of both.
A little bit of both, yeah.
Would you say patting is like just a tap, so, and petting is like more of an
entourage. Yes. Yeah. So what we do when we pat a dog, we usually just go tap, 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 like you're saying, and it's short and it's repetitive, and our hand is usually out flat. But when we are petting, it's a little bit more like massage, and I'm actually a myofunctional therapist and a canine masseur, so I'm quite used to using the techniques of massage. And when I pet a dog, I am using my hand on a curved sort of arc, and it's going along the body. So following the contour of the body, which is usually smooth and just quite relaxing. So I know when I pat a dog that my blood pressure is certainly being reduced, and it's a nice feeling. But when you do pat a dog, some of the things that we've got to remember is how we approach the dog. So a lot of dogs do not like being patted on the head. So if you come along and you go pat, pat, pat on the top of the dog's head, that can often make them really reactive. They can sometimes bite you because they feel that that you're standing over them, and that patting is sometimes blocking their vision, so they can't see because you're above them. But that intimidation of standing above and patting can, you know, be really sort of quite bad for some dogs. They will respond in a negative way. So a good approach to when you do want to pat or pet your dog is to approach underneath, so touching the chest, around the shoulders, those areas there. Usually dogs are a lot more comfortable. But if ever you're patting any dog, whether it be your own or another person's dog, watch for the body language of that dog. Just see if they are comfortable with you patting them, because not all dogs want to be patted. And I find that when you go out walking your dog, just about every person wants to touch your dog. Like, yep. Oh my gosh, it's so crazy. And for me, one of my dogs really is just a home dog. He doesn't like being out. He doesn't like people touching him. It's different if he's been groomed, but certainly no stranger, please touch. So do make sure that you ask anybody that you're walking their dog, if you do want to touch it, that they're okay with it, because it's not always something we want. The other thing is, don't just assume that the dog wants to be patted just because you want to do it. And if you see a dog maybe tied up out the front of a shop waiting for its owner to come back in, don't talk to it. It's already stressed. Please don't pat it, because the owner's not there. That dog is on high alert. It's waiting for its owner to come back. So we just want to make sure that we're not, you know, putting any extra stress onto the dog. Another one is, obviously, don't pat a dog when it's eating. This is a no-no. And, sometimes people want to remove bowls and do all sorts of things with their dog. Just let the dog be, eating by itself, and don't touch. If a dog is sleeping, again, Kimberly, this is an area that, if the dog wakes up, it can be quite...
If it gets startled. Yeah. Particularly older dogs where their hearing's maybe not very good, and they might sleep in a bit of a deeper sleep, and they can get startled, awake, because they really didn't hear you walking into the room or anything like that. And,
yes.
And it's very easy to catch those dogs unawares, and sometimes they'll jump up and,
Be reactive
just because they're startled.
Yes. Like a human.
Yeah,
absolutely. If someone startled me in the middle of the night, I'd jump up as well.
Yeah.
And the other thing is too, I have a client who has a guide dog, and he was sort of chatting to me about one of the situations where so many people come up to guide dogs and want to touch them.
Yes.
And you've got to remember that they're working. When they've got that harness on, they're working. So, please be mindful of those guide dogs. They're doing a job. Don't touch them. Don't ask to pat them. Goodness sake, don't give them any food or anything else.
Yeah.
And if you are walking your dog with it and there's a guide dog around, keep a safe distance. Keep your dog away from the guide dog, remembering that, he's working, or that dog is working. We just want to make sure that everyone's right. But yes, ask, can you pat a dog? Don't just go and pat it.
Good advice. And if you've got a question about dogs or cats or any other animal, I don't know. Can you answer questions about zoo animals?
And a pinch?
Maybe not.
Maybe not.
You can give us a call. This is Pet Chat on 2NURFM, and we have got Vicky on the line from Morpeth. Hi, Vicky. Your dog's got watery eyes.
Yes, just not all the time, just sometimes.
Okay.
And I was wondering, do dogs cry?
I think no. My general feeling would be that they don't. I mean, they obviously feel some emotions, but I don't think they necessarily feel sadness to the point where they cry. But it's much more likely to be, you know, something going on physiological with the eye. They can certainly have a tear response. So when I shine, a bright light into a dog's eye, some of those dogs will, you know, get a watery eye. They'll certainly water if they get a bit of dirt or something in it that you know, irritates the eye. And then we have some dogs that will have eyes that have issues with the tear production, usually low tear production, not high tear production, but that can actually sometimes appear as watery eyes. What kind of dog have you got? What is your little dog?
He's a miniature foxy.
Yeah,
he's
okay.
Nearly three.
Yeah, and he's a white dog, so you probably see some of that tear stain.
Yeah. His face is black.
Oh, okay.
He's a blue foxy.
Okay, yeah. So it's not the actual sort of red, rusty sort of tear stain that you're seeing. You're actually seeing liquid there.
No, it's not bad. Yeah. I actually took him to the vet today to have his nails done.
Mm-hmm.
And his eyes were clear.
Yeah, great.
But it just seems to happen every now and then. And he has an anxiety as soon as I leave the house.
Sure.
He's a mess.
Yeah. So, I mean, the important thing with eyes is that if it's persistent, it's all the time, then we probably want to get it checked out. If the eye looks red or sore, he's rubbing at it or shaking his head, we want to get it checked out. But it is an intermittent sort of bit of watery eye. You know, it could be very run-of-the-mill. And certainly, just like us, if we get a bit of dirt or dust or a bit of fur in our eye, or the dog gets a bit of fur in their eye, then the eye's natural response is to try to flush anything out of it by producing a bit more tears and actually, you know, sort of spilling over, so you get that flushing action. So it's probably a really natural sort of thing. So doesn't sound like in your guys' case it's a major problem.
No. Okay. I'm just listening to you talking about eyes, and I thought, I'll ask.
Sure, absolutely.
It's always good to check. Yeah. Thanks, Vicky. Thanks for your call. Okay, next on the line we have Jamie from Whitebridge. Hi, Jamie, how can we help?
Hey, I've got two questions.
Yeah.
So I've been told from a vet not to wash my dog every night because it can wash the pH level off his coat.
Okay.
Right, so my dog is an inside dog.
Yep.
And I was wondering, am I still right to water, like just normal water?
Yep.
Wet him down every night so that when he comes in, he doesn't get that smelly dog wet smell?
Yeah, I mean, like, we certainly don't want to, like, have him shampooed every day. That'll absolutely strip out the oils out of his coat and, you know, make his skin really dry and itchy. I'm interested, though, because for most people, like, wetting down the coat of the dog would actually make the smell of the dog worse. And so if that actually is improving the smell of your dog, then that makes me think that we may have, you know, maybe an underlying yeast infection or something like that on the skin, because that can be really smelly. And then if you're wiping it down or washing it away, you'll potentially get rid of some of that. So that's interesting, because normally, like, unless your dog is really, like, physically dirty, they've been in a mud puddle and they've gotten themselves dirty, if you wash a dog and in a dog shampoo, that sort of relatively clean dog smell should last a good 3 to 5 days, unless the dog, like I said, has gone and jumped in a mud puddle. So any thoughts about that, Cheryl?
Jamie, what breed of dog is it that you have?
I've got two American Staffies.
American Staffies, okay. And with your vet saying not to wash them all the time because of the change in the pH, did the vet say that there was any condition on the skin like Malassezia, any yeast or anything there producing?
No, my dogs have never had a rash.
Okay, so
one of my dogs, one of them gets very sensitive paws.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't do his paws that often because when you put them in the water, they get brittle and stuff like that. So we only do him probably twice a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the big concerns with bathing really regularly is that often people don't get the dog completely dry. So moisture sitting on the skin can increase the amount of bacteria and yeast on the dog, which often results in odour. So, you know, one of the things I would be trying to do is to make sure that when you are bathing the dog, even if you're just bathing it in water, that you get the dog completely dry. And I mean completely dry. The other thing is, if you weren't wanting to bath the dog as regularly or every time the dog comes inside, using something like Alavine conditioner, where you can actually put that conditioner on, which will in a way mask some of the odour, but it'll also aid the skin as well. So it sort of will help you minimising your bathing.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, leave-in conditioner. That's not a bad idea. Yeah, because it sounds a little bit unusual that the dog is, you know, smelly every day, that you're feeling you need to wipe him down every day. So, have a chat. I mean, I guess if you've got one that's got some sensitive paws, we can, the paws, the underside of the feet can be a real source of bacteria and yeast on the skin as well. So,
Yeah. So they check them regularly and they don't have any metal coming from their paws like feces or anything like that.
No, yeah.
I love that term, the CC smell of the feet, Jamie. Yeah. It really is that odour that you can get, that the CC Doritos, yep.
Yeah, so they've got no, I don't think they've got any yeast problems or nothing. I just didn't want me to be doing damage to their coat.
Sure.
Long-term.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, try some leave-in conditioner. I think that's the result that you'll get the best benefits from.
Now, okay, you've also got a dog that's agitated.
That was the first question.
Okay.
Now, my second question, I have two male staffies.
Yep.
One is D-sex and one is not D-sex.
Yep.
And what actually happens is I live with five female humans.
Yep.
Right? That actually sink their
period
at the same time. And what actually happens with my dog that isn't D-sexed is he gets this look in his eyes that goes glazed, they go cloudy, and then he just goes really funny. So my question is there anything that I can spray or put a collar on him or something like that, where when the girls do, he actually will leave them alone?
Probably not, because his, like, sense of smell is going to be pretty, I mean, it's probably changes in body odors and things like that he's picking up, and his sense of smell is going to be pretty, intuitive with that. I guess distracting him, using, feed toys to distract him, things like that. There's not really much that I think you're going to be able to do with that, you know, at this point. I don't know. I haven't got good thoughts about that.
I thought there might have been a spray, like that urine off stuff. I thought there would have been some sort of pheromone spray or something like that.
The trouble is you've got to put that on the target, and I'm not sure that your housemates are going to be real thrilled with that.
I've got to isolate him and put him in his room, and then he feels like he's done something wrong.
Wrong, yeah, sure.
So I mean, go in there and date him up and say, it's all right, mate, you haven't done anything wrong.
Yeah. You could certainly use some of the pheromone spray, like the Adaptyl Calm Dog Spray, just to try to give him a sense of calm and sort of well-being when you're sort of locking him away. And I would just try to make that a really positive experience for him, so that during that time when he does have to be locked away, that really good things happen with him in that room. So that might be the time that you pull out the frozen Kong that's got some good stuff in it for him, and he can, you know, have an afternoon of playing with a frozen Kong or something along those lines. Just try to turn that, you know, like you said, so he's not feeling like he's being punished for something that's outside of his control, but, you know, so that he starts to look forward a little bit more to sort of, I mean, he's a dog, he'll want to be with his people, but failing that, hopefully you can, you know, turn it into something that he can enjoy by giving him a special treat when he's locked away that way.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks. Thanks for your call, Jamie.
Good
Appreciate it. Good luck. Good times. Great music too in URFM 103.7. This is Pet Chat. And we're going to go to the Pet of the Week. Yeah. And we've got a few Pets of the Week today. Cassian and Azriel, two cats.
Yes, we've got these lovely two young cats. They're nine-month-old boys, a black and white one. And are they both black and white? I can't see. Oh, yeah, it looks both black and white, but different black and white. Pretty cute.
One's more black, one's more white.
Yep. And it says these guys have personality to spare and lots of charm, confident young cats, incredibly social and affectionate, happily seeking out human attention, making fast friends with everyone they meet. Cassian has mostly a black body all over with a white chest and a cute little white stripe on his nose. Azriel is mostly white on the bottom half of his body, and then he's sort of got a black top, a black back and things like that. Easygoing cats who would suit most homes. I do want them to go together. They haven't been introduced to children or dogs yet, but they are young cats, and they feel the organization feels that with the confidence that they display, they're likely to interact pretty well with them. They are cat friendly and they love their humans. So these two boys are, like I said, looking to go together. And so if you're interested in a pair of really nice young cats, that would be good.
Okay, and next we've got Caesar, a Mastiff Cross.
Yeah, so this little guy, is a gentle giant, so he's not super little. 1 year old, has a heart as big as his paws. He's a brindle-looking Mastiff-y sort of cross. It says he loves, snuggles, belly rubs, and is a loyal companion. He's sweet and affectionate soul who thrives on love and attention. His favorite things are head scratches, couch cuddles, and showing off his ever-growing list of tricks. So he's obviously got a little bit of brains to him. He's polite and well-mannered, and he walks beautifully on the leash, has been a total gentleman around other dogs. And he's not tested with cats, small children, or pocket pets yet. So we probably want to avoid that until we know what he's like. And he's going to be, best suited to an active somebody who's pretty active, an active single or couple, family without young children, that sort of thing. So, yep.
And he's a new listing, so, get in fast if you like Caesar.
Yeah.
There you go. 2NURFM.com.au is the place to go, and you can check out our lifestyle section for our Pets of the Week in the Pet Chat section. And next we've got Karen from Elmore Vale on the line. Hi, Karen. How can we help you?
Hello, how are you ladies? Good?
Good,
yeah,
thanks.
Good, thanks.
That's good. Now, my question is, my dear mother has introduced cooked prawns to my cat, and she's now got the stage where she has cooked prawns every day for lunch, and it's four that she has, and I went to the stage where I couldn't get cooked prawns, and I had raw prawns, but I used to run them under hot water or put them in the microwave to colour them, like pink them up.
Yeah, sure, okay.
Now, yeah. I have, and believe it or not, tried not to give her prawns for lunch.
Yep.
And she has turned her nose up at anything else.
Yep.
So she's got a routine and she's stickler for it.
Yeah, so...
And I'm just wondering if it's doing her harm or not?
Well, it's not a balanced diet. So long term, it's not great. And unfortunately, cats can be really, like, they develop a preference, a taste preference for something, and then they really, you know, hold out for it. So what I would suggest we do, it's not something we would recommend doing long terms. And there is something about prawns that cats really love. I would wean her off of them. You're going to have to, like, slowly back her off of it. And then ideally we'd really want to keep it as a treat. And some, fish types have what we call thiaminases in them. So they're enzymes that actually break down thiamine. And these cats can become thiamine deficiency if they're just eating straight fish or fishy products. So it's really not an ideal sort of situation. So if you're up to four, what I would do is say back her down to like three prawns for a week, and then the next week go to two prawns for a week. Always obviously offering, having some other food, some other wet or dry or a mix of wet and dry cat food around, and then just slowly sort of wean her off. But I would sort of recommend getting it to a point where she's not expecting it every day. And how old is your cat? I haven't asked that. Is she an old cat?
No, she's six.
Yeah,
no,
okay.
Seven.
So plenty young. Yeah, so plenty young. So she's got plenty of life. I mean, if she were to just eat prawns or eating predominantly prawns for the next 6 years, then she's not going to be a very long-lived cat. So, yeah, I would definitely try to just, but do it slowly over a few weeks and get her off of them, and then just try to encourage her to eat some other things and some good balanced cat foods.
She does have cat foods as well, because that's her night meal.
Yep.
And she has biscuits in the morning.
Yep.
And she has like a mixture of wet meals. She's
great.
A tuna freak. She loves tuna. She's not much on anything else.
Yep.
She's not big on chicken unless it's the free range.
Yep.
And she only has that once in a while and then doesn't want it again for a long time.
Yeah.
My mother also introduced her, God love her, to steak.
Yeah.
So raw steak, she has that every now and again, very rarely though.
Yeah.
Yeah, even I don't eat that much steak, but yeah. So she's spoiled rotten.
She is,
But she's a great, she's a gorgeous, she's my kid. So
great.
She's
absolutely
gorgeous. But she's, like I said, it's, I'm just a little bit worried that, because at one stage there I couldn't get cooked prawns and I had to get raw prawns, and like I said, it was, I was worried about them more than I was the cooked prawns. But
they can become obsessive about fish and fish products, so we want to sort of focus on the balanced cat foods if we can, and just keep the treats for the treats.
Good luck with that, Karen. Thanks for your call. This is Pet Chat on 2NURFM, and Dr. Kimberly O, you were going to talk about eyes.
Yeah, well, listen, I just wanted to talk about a condition that dogs get particularly called dry eye, or the technical term is keratoconjunctivitis seca, but we call it dry eye. And it's an important condition because we see it a lot in middle-aged to older dogs. They're often the dogs that come in and their eyes have been quite goopy. So even though we call it dry eye, but their eyes often come into us with sort of thick, mucusy, sort of goopy eyes. And sometimes they're thick to the point where the dogs can't open the lids sort of all the way. And this is an autoimmune condition. So it means that the dog's own immune system is having a reaction against their tear ducts and their tear glands. So the glands around the eye that produce the nice tear film that keeps our eyes nice and moist and allow us to blink and things like that, they in dogs can have a reaction against that, and it can shut those glands down. And the reason this is really important is because if we identify it early on in the course, we can often reverse it, and we can use local anti-inflammatories to sort of shut down that immune response, and we can preserve the function of the gland. And so the dog does need to be on medication pretty well for the rest of its life, but we can really prevent some of the secondary changes that happen, what we call pigmentary keratitis, or where the clear cornea actually develops pigment, like you get melanin pigment that travels across the eye because the eye is so irritated and it's trying to protect itself, so it tries to sort of thicken up its tissue. And that can affect the dog's vision. But we can reverse it. It's a completely reversible condition. The trouble is that if it goes on for too long, and you know, when I'm not talking like a week or two, I'm talking 6 months or so, then the gland basically burns itself out. And so then it doesn't matter what drugs you put in. There's no functional glandular tissue anymore. We can't reinstate that. And then the owners are then having to like put lubricating eye drops in the dog's eyes 5 or 6 times a day to keep the dogs from developing corneal ulcers and things like that. Whereas, like I said, if we identify it really early, then putting drops in once or twice a day probably for the rest of the dog's life, but is usually enough to settle everything down. We prevent those secondary changes and the dogs become way more comfortable. So it's just something I'd sort of say, particularly if you've got a dog that's got bulgy eyes, or you're seeing any sort of pigment, you know, shadowing across the cornea, or if you're thinking to yourself, gee, my dog's eyes, you know, there's a bit of sleep in them in the mornings, but now it's becoming really thick and gooey and I'm having to wipe it out 3 or 4 times a day. That's something that we'd really want to trigger a vet visit. They'll do a little test called a Schirmer tear test, where we measure the tear production over the course of a minute to see what functionality the gland is producing at the moment. And so, sooner is better than later, essentially, with this one.
So does it Is it kind of like a conjunctivitis?
It causes conjunctivitis because the eyes get red and inflamed because they're dry all the time. I don't know if you've ever had sand in your eye and you get that really gritty feeling. Humans with dry eye report that their eyes feel gritty all the time. So we have to assume that dogs' eyes feel the same. But it's actually, it's just an autoimmune condition. It can come up spontaneously for no particular reason. We don't know what triggers it. And it basically, it's just that the glands stop producing tears and then the eyes become dry, and then you get this whole constellation of secondary effects. So ulcers are one of them, which, you know, if they get progressively worse to, into their worst port, you can actually have the eye rupture. But most often we get these changes where they either get scarring or pigment across the cornea, which affects their vision. But the eyes are very painful, even, you know, when they're dry. They're just, they're painful and irritated, and the dogs are really uncomfortable.
Right. Good to know. Now we're out of time. Thank you so much for today, ladies, and we'll catch up with you in next week, maybe.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Sounds good. To NURFM. The winner of our $50 pet food voucher is Josh from Liddell. Congratulations, Josh. We'll be in touch.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.